Coronavirus Daily Briefing is a brand new podcast that gives you all of the headlines and context around the COVID-19 crisis that we are currently facing. They are the sponsor for this episode of Morbidology. Every day at 5 p.m, Coronavirus Daily Briefing gives you the lowdown on all of the things that happened that day, with all of the things that you can do to better protect yourself tomorrow. It's a quick 15-minute episode and then you're completely up to date. The New Yorker magazine has even referred to Coronavirus Daily Briefing as one of the top COVID-19 podcasts to listen to. So search your podcast app right now and subscribe to Coronavirus Daily Briefing. That's Coronavirus Daily Briefing. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. For any parent, no matter the age of their child, one of the worst things that they can experience is their child going missing. The not knowing is arguably more traumatizing than knowing that they aren't coming home. It's an open wound, so to speak, that never really heals. One minute, they could feel a glimmer of hope, but then within an instant, that hope could evaporate and in its place, they could feel a depth of despair. In Gainesville, Florida, the Aguilar family experienced this emotional roller coaster when their son, Christian Aguilar, vanished. They were held captive by the uncertainty of Kristen's fate, but still held on to the hope that Christian would be coming home. Christian Aguilar was an 18-year-old man from Miami living in the Springs complex of the University of Florida dorm in Gainesville. After graduating from Doral Academy in Miami in 2012, Christian began majoring in biomedical engineering at UF in the summer. It was always Christian's dream to attend the University of Florida. Growing up, he had plastered his walls with Gators posters. He had dreamed of becoming a heart surgeon or an architect.
My son was going to the University of Florida in Gainesville. Christian got to his dream to become a Gator. I never saw my son so happy. He was glowing.
Christian was a typical teenager. He liked playing soccer and loved indie music and hip-hop, especially Kanye West. His favorite movie of all time was Iron Man, and he was obsessed with the TV show Scrubs. According to friends, Christian had a brilliant mind and an eye for design, but he lacked confidence. Quote, he never felt like he was good enough, but he was pretty much better than most of us, end quote, said his friend Alyssa DeBazzo. Christian's father, Carlos, had come to the United States when he was 19 years old. Much like Christian, Carlos had big ambitions of attending college and had dreamed of becoming a journalist. Sadly, Carlos struggled financially and had to abandon his hopes and dreams and instead seek out odd work at hotels in the Miami area. Once he saved enough money, his high school sweetheart, Claudia, moved over to Miami. Carlos later became a property manager while Claudia worked at a freight company. They married in October of 1992, and the following year, Christian was born. Quote, my firstborn, he was a special baby, a gift, which is why we named him Christian. He changed my life because he made me care about our future, end quote, said Carlos. 2 years later, the couple had another son, Alexander. 18-year-old Christian was last seen on the 20th of September 2012 at around 6 p.m. near Straits Motorsports on Northwest 13th Street.
My name is Carlos Aguilar, and I'm the parent of Christian Aguilar. He's a student over at the university. His girlfriend has been trying to contact him since yesterday, and he's not answering. He normally responds to his girlfriend right away, and if he's so concerned about it, we are concerned right now. This is not his normal behavior, and I'm wondering if you guys can help us. The last time that I spoke to him was at 3:42 p.m. yesterday. He sent me a text message. That's the last time that I heard from him.
A missing person report was put together, which described Christian as standing at around 5 feet 10 inches tall. He was wearing a blue-gray hoodie and light-colored jeans when he was last seen. However, just the following day, one of Christian's friends came forward to inform Christian's family that Christian had gotten into an altercation with another friend named Pedro Bravo, who had attended Doral Academy with Christian. Around the same time, Pedro was involuntarily committed for a mental health evaluation after making suicidal comments. Quote, "As a father, I am in agony. It has already been 2 days. The more time passes, the less chance he has to survive," end quote, said Carlos.
"I don't know how long it's going to take me, but I'm not going to come back to Miami unless I go with my son."
While being questioned, Pedro told investigators that he had beaten Christian up and left him in the parking lot in the 4900 block of Northwest 13th Street at around 6 p.m. Following this revelation, Christian's friends and family started to search the area of US 411 between 39th and 53rd Avenues for any sign of Christian. Gainesville police officer Ben Tobias made an announcement asking any businesses in the area to keep a lookout and search around their premises to see if they can find any evidence which could lead them to Christian. Quote, "We're asking everyone to be on the lookout for him. We have some information gained in the investigation that indicates foul play," end quote. Police suggested that Christian was possibly disoriented and or seriously injured and unable to seek medical help. The search continued throughout the weekend.
Family, friends, and police have been searching almost non-stop for Christian Aguilar, who went missing on Thursday. But the UF freshman's whereabouts are still a mystery.
Pedro hadn't been arrested, but had hired an attorney and stopped cooperating with police. Christian's friends and family broke into teams and continued to search the area where Christian was last seen. More than 30 people from back in Miami caught the bus to assist in the search. Christian's aunt, Sandra, was assisted by a group as they searched alongside State Road 121 at the east of US 411. Quote, "We have hope and faith that we'll find him," end quote, said Sandra. Other groups searched a wooded area near Interstate 75 while Carlos pleaded for help on television. Quote, "I need help. I need volunteers. I need ATVs. I need people to come here prepared to walk and search with me," end quote, begged Carlos. Upon seeing Carlos on television, faculty and staff from Doral Academy back in Miami mobilized. As many as a dozen teachers, assistant principals, and even the principal himself made their way to Gainesville to help out in the search. They also collected around $2,000 to help Christian's family. Quote, "We want to do anything we can to find Christian. He's part of our family. A lot of manpower is needed and we want to help," end quote, said Principal Douglas Rodriguez.
I guess my first thought was as a mother, of having a son myself, and just you have to help. You have to help somebody. It's somebody's child.
We live in Gainesville. This is one of our students that's in distress, and we're here to help and do anything we can.
As the search continued, it was announced that Pedro had been arrested and charged with depriving a victim of a crime of medical treatment, which is a third-degree felony. Investigators had revealed that Pedro had given police three different versions of what had happened between him and Christian. First of all, Pedro claimed that he had dropped Christian off in a parking lot completely unharmed after they spoke about Pedro's depression and got into an audible altercation.
Tell me a little bit about what, where you were with Christian yesterday.
The reason I wanted to talk to him is because I've been going through a very rough time, because I've been contemplating suicide, and I almost attempted at one point.
What prompted you to start having these thoughts recently?
Recently, college, moving out.
You take classes here at UF?
No, I'm sadly soon. Like, I remember of where I wanted to be when I was little, like where, what university I wanted to study at when I was little. And then I'm at this point and I'm not where I want to be. I wanted to talk to Christian ever since I got here because I know he'd be one of the people that would really help me out. So I called him up and he agreed to meet me Thursday at 2. We got in my car and we went to Zaxby's Chicken. And then he's like, oh, yeah, can we pull into the Best Buy? And then we went into the Best Buy and we found the new Kanye West CD and he got it. I felt like I screwed up my future. So we're driving around and we're talking about how I want to kill myself and how my reasoning behind it, like why I want to kill myself. And he's like, you shouldn't do it. And at that point, we saw a hitchhiker, just a random guy. And I looked at him, he looked at me, and he was like, oh, why not? Like, it's nothing bad. It's two of us against one person if anything happens. And I remember today, I was a little bit nervous. Because when I checked my car to see if there was, like, if there was anything missing, because I had a bunch of my art supplies in the back. And I looked today, and my duct tape is missing.
You dropped this hitchhiker off north of 441 at a storage facility?
He's like, just drop me off right over there. I pull in there, he gets off, and we leave the guy. And then after that, we jump back on the same thing. Of me talking about me committing suicide. And I'm like, you don't know what I'm going through. He got frustrated and angry at me, and he's like, stop the car, I want to get off.
So about what time was it you dropped Christian off?
Around 6 or 7. I was angry at him because I'm like, fine, you don't want to, like, in my mind, I'm like, fine, you don't want to help me? Don't help me. So I stopped the car, and I let him get off, and I drove away. I really regret it now. I wish I could have kept driving and be like, no, screw you. I don't care. You're not going to get off. And then that's the last I heard of him.
Next, Pedro claimed that the altercation was physical as well as audible. Pedro now claimed that he hit Christian once and then left the parking lot.
You're right, I can't keep everything from you, and I have to tell you one thing.
Okay.
Like, in the scuffle with Chris, it wasn't just really an argument. At one point, I made the comment about Erica, and he got angry at that. But then he came back with, maybe you should just kill yourself. And that's when I turn around and I hit him in the face. Hard enough, at least, to bruise myself.
Was he under your hand?
I didn't know, just paint.
How many times did you hit him?
Just once.
Pedro, what really happened to Christian?
I already told you. I punched him in the face. I told him to get out.
I know, but can you see how I'm having a hard time believing everything when nobody can find Christian?
I know.
You're the last person who saw him.
Yes.
And you punched him in the face.
Yes.
Finally, Pedro told police that he had beaten Christian for around 10 to 15 minutes before leaving him unconscious but alive.
Sometimes things happen in the heat of the moment that you wouldn't normally do.
There's things you'd wish you could change, but...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I can also understand that if someone is messing around with the girl that I was in love with in high school, he's going to UF, where you should be going. I can see that there's some problems in there. If you got in a fight with somebody or you did something in the heat of the moment that wasn't intentional, be honest about it, because if it comes out later, it's gonna make you look like you're guilty of first degree murder. You planned it, you picked him up, you took him out. I know you're not that type of person.
I'm gonna be honest, but I wanted to hurt him, like really hurt him for doing that. It wasn't just me pushing him out of the car. It was like, pushed him out of the car, then I got out of the car. Then I kept punching him. I was just there and I was wailing on him. And I kept going until I could see that he was okay, but he couldn't move anymore. And then I got in my car and left.
Pedro accompanied police to several locations in the area he said he had been with Christian, but nothing was found at any of the locations. There was no evidence that a fight had taken place and there was no sign of Christian. According to Erica Freeman, Christian's girlfriend, Christian and Pedro had been fighting over her. She had dated Pedro in the past and had told The Sun that she believed that Pedro hadn't acted alone. Erica and Pedro had begun dating as sophomores in high school. Erica was initially drawn to Pedro because he could make her laugh. During this time, Christian and Pedro were really good friends, having even double-dated to the senior prom. But in summer of 2012, Erica ended the relationship. Pedro wouldn't accept the breakup and was said to become increasingly depressed and obsessive.
I understand that you and Pedro were dating all through high school.
Yes, it was going to be 3 years in October.
So about 3 years, yeah.
After I did break up with him, he was very possessive. Like, it was kind of like, I don't care what you're feeling right now. Like, I want to be with you. So I was staying away from him.
Erica managed to get away from Pedro when she moved to Santa Fe Community College in Gainesville. Erica then began dating Christian at the start of the semester. Erica said that Christian made her feel special and said that they had so much in common that she was just drawn to him. Following Pedro's arrest, a number of Pedro's friends said that they couldn't quite believe that he was involved. Quote, Pedro and Christian went out with friends to have a good time. That's not the Pedro I saw with my son, end quote, said Carlos. Pedro's family had come out to Gainesville. They felt dreadful about what had happened and wanted to help out in any way possible. They had anticipated helping out in the search for Christian, but Ron Kozlowski, an attorney for Pedro, told them they should not take part out of fear that it would cause too much of a distraction. They flew back to Miami, but Carlos said that he was hoping that they would return. He harbored no ill will against Pedro's family and said that if they wanted to come back to Gainesville, that he would help them pay for the flight with donations that had poured in for Christian's family. Early next week, Pedro appeared in court where the judge ordered that if he were able to post his bond of $100,000, then he would be ordered to wear a monitoring bracelet. Christian's mother, Claudia, was given the chance to directly address Pedro for the first time. She begged him for any more information about what happened that night and where her son could be. Quote, we're not asking for any more. Only that, end quote. Pedro refused to reply. The following day, police revealed that Pedro had purchased a shovel and duct tape just days before Christian disappeared. They said that they had not managed to recover the items, but said that they had evidence that he had purchased them in Best Buy. Police were still trying to talk to Pedro, but by this point, he had completely stopped cooperating. Quote, it's his right, but we believe he is the only person who knows the whereabouts of Christian. It's frustrating because he knows where he is, end quote, said police spokesman Ben Tobias. This purchase history had very ominous undertones and casted a dark shadow over the already grim search. Quote, I am trying to stay positive, trying not to let myself think of the worst case scenario, end quote, said Christian's 16-year-old brother, Alexander. While Christian's family were still holding out hope that he was still alive, Carlos admitted that they needed to start preparing for the worst. The search for Christian soon shifted to an area in the Airport Industrial Park, just north of Gainesville Regional Airport. The reason for the shift was because Christian's cell phone had pinged from a nearby tower after he had vanished, and then at 8:14 p.m. his phone was switched off. Christian's family were still proactive in the search. They continued to trudge through wasteland and saunter through woodland. During an unimaginable time of turbulence and sorrow, Carlos became a rock of stability for his family. He made plea after plea, while Claudia printed out missing person flyers with Christian's face emblazoned on the front. Quote, I don't really know the words to describe this nightmare. It's a tragedy, a sad story, end quote, said Carlos. 7 days passed since Christian was last seen. By this point, more than 200 police officers and numerous volunteers had covered more than 10 square miles of woodland in and around Gainesville. Other areas had been searched with the assistance of bloodhounds and helicopters. On the 8th day of the search, Pedro was charged with the murder of Christian, even though no body had been recovered. It was revealed that CCTV had picked up Pedro and Christian together at a Best Buy at 3 p.m. on the day that Christian vanished. Police announced that they believed that Christian had been murdered by Pedro at some point between 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. when Pedro was next seen. They also announced that they were asking the public for help, stating that they had a window of time where they could not account for Pedro's whereabouts. in a public statement, they asked all business owners to check their surveillance footage to see if they could spot Pedro's dark blue 2004 Chevrolet Blazer. Police would also reveal that they had discovered Christian's backpack hidden in a suitcase in Pedro's closet and found bloodstains throughout his car as well as particles of lime rock. This led police to speculate that Christian's body may have been buried by Pedro. Police released another statement asking people who have lime rock roads on their property that were accessible to the general public to please search the area for any evidence of ground that may have been disturbed. By this point in the investigation, it was looking highly unlikely that Christian would be found alive. In the beginning of October, Gainesville police announced they no longer needed volunteers to assist in the search for Christian. Spokesman Ben Tobias said that the only remaining area that needed searched were limited and required extra care. Quote, "Anything that is found at this point of the investigation will be considered evidence, and we can't risk the integrity of the evidence being handled by anyone but law enforcement," end quote, he said. As the search scaled back, a grand jury reaffirmed the murder charge against Pedro and added a second charge, kidnapping. On the 12th of October, Christian's family received the crushing news that a body had been discovered around 60 miles southwest of where the search had been conducted. Two young men were on the grounds of the Gulf Hammock Hunting Club, a private club with around 300 members, when they found human remains. They were located around 8 miles off State Road 24 on Parker Boulevard. Jesse Elveridge and James Raines had been searching for medicinal herbs when a pungent smell wafted up their nostrils. Initially, they had thought that maybe the smell was coming from a decomposing deer. They decided to follow the smell, hoping that they could get a set of antlers. However, when they discovered the source of the smell, they noticed that this was certainly no animal, and they recoiled in horror as they came across the partially decomposed body of a young man. The two men called the Levy County Sheriff's Office.
I walked up about the same time and I said, "Is that a human head?" It looked like a human skull face down. The only person I could think of was a boy missing from the University of Florida.
In addition to the body, police found a pair of blue Vans shoes, duct tape, and blue jeans. The clothing matched what Christian had been wearing on the day that he disappeared. Police announced that it was likely that the body was Christian, but said that they needed to confirm the identity using forensic methods. In a news conference, Carlos said, quote, "I just want to make sure that everybody knows that our prayers have been heard. The family believes that Christian has been found, but we will wait until the authorities confirm it. Our family is going to be grieving until the confirmation, and at that moment, we are going to have the honor of taking Christian back home and have his funeral," end quote. Carlos said that now, he simply wanted to know how Christian spent his final moments on Earth so that he could begin to try to understand what he had went through and to give honour to his son. He ended the conference by thanking everybody who had assisted in the search for his son. Lena Kramer believes that starting your day off healthy and lean with a fresh cup of coffee and their creamer is the perfect way to begin a healthy new chapter. This episode of Morbidology has been sponsored by them. Lena Kramer is the realization that there is such a thing as a healthy and tasty coffee creamer. It is a combination of coconut oil and functional supplements to keep your morning ritual guilt-free. Lena Kramer is the only natural powder creamer on the market and is gluten-free, sugar-free, lactose-free, and paleo and keto diet-friendly, meaning that everybody can enjoy it with their morning coffee. Lena Kramer is available in over 7,000 stores nationwide and on their website. Their link is in the description of this episode. So do yourself a favor and pick up a bottle today. Make sure you use the code MORBID15 for 15% off your order. Podcorn is revolutionizing podcast sponsorships. Gone are the days when only the big podcasts with a whole production team can receive sponsorships. For indie podcasters such as myself, Podcorn is a massive help, and they've even sponsored this episode. Podcorn is the easiest way for brands and podcasters to connect, no matter what size your podcast or brand. Podcorn is simplifying every aspect of podcast sponsorships. On Podcorn, you're able to set your own rate per advert, and you can collaborate with brands directly to work out the best way to promote their product. You have 100% control and freedom, and payment is seamless. Podcorn has an amazing and easy-to-use marketplace to connect podcasters to awesome sponsorship opportunities, including host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. So click the link in my show notes on this episode to sign up to Podcorn today and start browsing sponsorship opportunities. Two days later, the worst fears of Christian's family were confirmed when dental records would determine that the body was Christian. As Christian's autopsy was underway to determine his cause of death, public defender Stacey Scott said that Pedro would be pleading not guilty to first-degree murder. On the 22nd of October, Christian's funeral was held at St. Dominic's Catholic Church in Miami. His silver casket sat at the front of the wooden church, surrounded by photographs depicting Christian's short but happy life. The photographs showed Christian from a giggly baby to Christian as a young man. In the photos, Christian and his friends and family laughed and looked more than happy to be in each other's company. Now, they all wore black to mourn their friend whose life was cut short. Over 200 people crammed into the small church to say goodbye to their friend, the one that had so much promise to do good things with his life. Christian's family sat on the front pew as some of Christian's favourite songs emanated from the speakers, including songs from Mumford & Sons and Frank Sinatra's I Did It My Way. The priest covered Christian's casket with a white sheet and said a prayer. Afterwards, a small choir sang in Spanish and the priest warned against vengeance. Quote, I know you're sad and strained, but your suffering will abate the Lord. There is bad in the hearts of people, and we know that. But there is also good, like the abundance of goodness from all of those who helped look for Christian. End quote. Christian and Pedro's friends were still trying to come to terms with what had happened. On one hand, their friend had been murdered, and on the other hand, it was their friend who had allegedly killed him. Quote, it hits me at random times. Your friend is gone, one's in a box and one's in jail. And it hurts, not just because of Christian, but because Pedro was our friend too, end quote, said Hugo Torres. Christian's brother, Alexander, addressed the crowd, stating, quote, everyone who knew him knew he was a beautiful person. He was very happy. And that is how I would like you to remember him, not for everything that has happened, end quote. Before leaving the church to head to the burial, a church member gave Carlos a blessing and Alexander a gift. He opened the box and inside was the book, The Five People You Meet in Heaven by Mitch Albom. Christian was buried at Our Lady of Mercy Catholic Cemetery in Doral. The following day, Christian's cause of death was announced. He hadn't been beaten like Pedro had claimed. He had been drugged and then suffocated to death. Following the revelation, Pedro's indictment was broadened to include more counts, including poisoning with food or water, tampering with physical evidence, providing false information to law enforcement, and improper transportation of a dead body. Shortly thereafter, Christian's family started the Christian Aguilar Search and Rescue Foundation, which is an organization dedicated to using trained tracking dogs to find missing victims. Strike Force K9, a Miami-based dog training company, donated two dogs to the foundation. Jay was a 9-month-old Belgian Malinois, and Atos was a 2-year-old Dutch Shepherd. Yaffe, a 7-month-old Belgian Malinois, was also going to join the organization once his training was complete. In June of 2013, it was announced that Pedro's trial was being pushed back. Pedro's lawyer, Michael Ruppert, told Judge Peter Seg that he needed to take depositions of 110 witnesses and said that he had not even started this process yet, so would need more time to prepare. Finally, in August of 2014, Pedro Bravo's trial began. By this point, prosecutors had announced that they wouldn't be seeking the death penalty against Pedro, but instead, life in prison without parole. Christian's family made the 350-mile drive from Miami to Gainesville. It was a drive they had done so many times before. The first trip was so full of promise and excitement when they dropped Christian off to start his freshman year at the University of Florida. But it was just weeks later that the family returned to desperately search for their son. Since then, they had made the trip numerous times, for each court hearing, no matter how small. Finally, they were hoping that this would be their last trip, and they could finally leave Gainesville, knowing that they had got justice for their son. Outside of the court, Carlos said, quote, "This thing has broken our heart. It's a pain you can't take away. The question is, why us? I always felt that I was the type of father that I could protect my sons from anything and that I would be able to give my life for them if it was necessary. That has been taken away from me," end quote. As he spoke, he clutched on to a bracelet that was the last Father's Day present that he received from Christian. For the past almost 2 years, Christian's family had suffered with the thought of Christian's final moments on Earth. Carlos had suffered from panic attacks. He was put on anti-anxiety medication, and the family started grief therapy where they met other parents who had gone through the same traumatic experience of losing their child to murder. As mentioned briefly earlier, they developed the Christian Aguilar Search and Rescue Foundation. They also created the Christian Aguilar Child Alert smartphone app. It was developed by the Missing Children Global Network, and it allowed users to receive alerts about missing people and submit anonymous tips to police. During opening statements, prosecutor Brian Kramer told the courtroom that Pedro had orchestrated a plan to drug and strangle Christian because he was obsessed with his ex-girlfriend, Erica, who was Christian's current girlfriend. He described how Pedro had Googled, quote, "How do sleeping pills kill you?" end quote, and purchased a shovel to hide the body, indicating premeditation. The jury were shown photographs of Pedro's journal, quote, "No one will stop me. I will get out of Miami and into Gainesville and I will get her back," end quote, read one entry. Pedro had been planning on attending Florida International University, but instead he decided to move to Gainesville to be closer to Erica, his ex-girlfriend. Pedro's defense attorney, Michael Ruppert, said during opening statements that Pedro didn't kill Christian. Instead, he suggested that Pedro and Christian got into a fist fight while in Pedro's car on the day that Christian disappeared, but said that he let him out of the car and drove off. Quote, "He punches his friend Christian, pulls over, and there's a fight. When he left, Christian was breathing and alive," end quote, said Ruppert. Prosecutor Kramer refuted this, telling the jury that Pedro had spent days planning the murder. He showed photographs of Pedro purchasing duct tape and a shovel, the same duct tape that would be found with Christian's body. He also said that in Pedro's car, they discovered a plastic drink bottle which had sleeping pill residue inside of it. Furthermore, empty sleeping pill capsules were found inside Pedro's home. According to Prosecutor Kramer, Pedro had a mutual friend set up a meeting with Christian that day. They had hung out for 2 hours before Pedro strangled Christian in a Walmart parking lot. He described how it took Christian 13 minutes to die. As the sleeping pills took effect, Prosecutor Kramer said that Pedro slipped into the back seat and strangled Christian with a belt that was found in the back seat. Inside Pedro's car, Christian's DNA and blood was discovered, despite the fact that Pedro had attempted to conceal it by spilling paint. Witness testimony quickly got underway, with Carlos first of all taking the stand. He described the moment that he first found out that his son was missing and Pedro had admitted to fighting with him. Quote, "The first conversation I had with him, he told me that they had an argument and that he left him. I told police, I think Pedro did something to my son," end quote, said Carlos. When Erica took to the stand, she told the courtroom how Pedro had texted her, telling her that he had moved to Gainesville. She described how she was in shock and wasn't comfortable seeing Pedro, but when she did finally see him, she didn't tell him that she and Christian were dating.
"I know Pedro didn't take the breakup that well, so no one was supposed to know about us dating, and it was a fragile thing.
So Pedro shows up here sometime in August.
I turn around, he's like right there, and I was kind of like in shock.
Erica told the courtroom that it was her who had set Pedro and Christian up that day. She had hoped that Christian would be able to speak to Pedro and help him through his depression. She said that she and Christian had been planning on going out for dinner that night, but when he didn't show up, she raised the alarm. She was handed Pedro's journal and was asked to read out a few of the pages. His writings indicated a very depressed man. Quote, "I want to be happy and I want to be loved. How do I feel? I feel as if someone stabbed me and I bleeded out and died," end quote. He wrote frequently about wanting to win Erica back. Quote, "I want her back. Please, I'll give anything. I want to give up everything to be with her once again," end quote. In one entry, Pedro described duct tape on Christian's hands and neck, along with the words, quote, "The gist of what put me here is that they found him," end quote. In another, he wrote, quote, "I am a monster for having hurt Christian the way I did. No apology will be enough to make up for what I have done," end quote. Erica also read from a suicide note that Pedro had written while in jail. It read, quote, "Every day in here is a day spent wanting to die. I am a monster for hurting Chris the way I did, and monsters shouldn't exist in this world. I have spent every day wishing to go back in time to have taken my own life before any of this happened," end quote. On the second day of the trial, video surveillance was shown to the courtroom. It was CCTV footage from Walmart's parking lot. It showed Pedro's car enter the parking lot and stay there for over 2 hours. However, the CCTV indicated that nobody ever got out of the car or in the car. Afterwards, Michael Antle, a digital forensic expert, testified about Pedro's internet searches. He had Googled things such as, quote, "What is chloroform? Good anesthetic chemicals? How to slice your wrist the right way and why not to commit suicide," end quote. He had also found searches such as, quote, "Can rubbing alcohol knock someone out? Stats on unsolved murders and how do sleeping pills kill you," end quote. Detective Matt Gockel testified about Pedro's phone activity on the evening and the night of Christian's disappearance. It was revealed that Pedro's flashlight had been on 9 times and had been used for over 45 minutes.
It's a long time to use your flashlight app on your phone, unless you're burying a body in the woods.
From 11:31 p.m. to 12:01 a.m., there was no activity on Pedro's phone. And then at 1:23 a.m., he was back at his apartment. According to his cell phone locations from that night, Pedro was not where he claimed he was. Photographs were also shown to the jury, which indicated a violent struggle had taken place inside Pedro's car. There was a cracked windshield covered in duct tape and blood stains on the car's seats, along with a blood-stained paint can and shoes. Photographs also showed a mud cake shovel, which was found behind Pedro's apartment. Videos of Pedro's interrogation were also played out during trial. Initially, Pedro had claimed that he was at home sleeping at 1 a.m. However, a receipt had been found inside his car, which showed that he had been at McDonald's at the time.
People who don't have anything to hide and don't have any reason to hide it usually remember if they get up at 1:30 in the morning from a dead sleep and go down to McDonald's and get something to eat.
I might have had like the midnight munchies, just like been really hungry and gone out, but I don't.
Those little places where you order your food has a little camera. Well, like, am I going to see your face in at McDonald's at 1 something in the morning?
Probably.
Probably? Would you say definitely I'll see your face?
You will definitely see my face.
Okay.
Other inconsistencies arose, and in the video, Detective Randy Roberts urged Pedro to tell the truth. Next, Pedro claimed that Christian told him he should kill himself, and Pedro responded by punching Christian once before changing his story once again and then claiming he punched him multiple times before leaving him in a parking lot. Pedro's former cellmate turned jailhouse informant claimed during the trial that Pedro had confessed to murdering Christian to him.
He parked over, on the side of the parking lot away from Walmart, you know, he got out like he had to find something in the back seat, and he told me that, you know, when he was back there, he, you know, basically put a moving strap around the kid's neck and braced himself against the seat, putting his body weight against it, and his nose started bleeding. He said that he remembers watching the radio, the clock on the radio, and said it took like 13 minutes for the kid to, you know, I guess die. He said he kept the strap on his, you know, his neck, but that he had duct taped his hands and his mouth up. And while he was riding, he said that, you know, the kid Chris kept, it was making a sound like, ugh.
Pedro allegedly told Michael Angelo that as he strangled Christian in his car, he watched the clock on the radio and said that it took 13 minutes for Christian to die. 13 minutes. That is a long time to die. It was actually Michael who had directed police to where Pedro had hidden the shovel under a wooden walkway behind his apartment. Towards the end of the trial, Pedro testified on his own behalf. As he spoke, he smiled quite frequently and described how he was, quote, breaking apart piece by piece, end quote, when he and Christian met up to talk about his depression. He said he had come to Gainesville to start fresh and to try and reconcile with Erica. He claimed that while in the Walmart parking lot, he had hit Christian once in the face and said that was why Christian's blood was found in his car. He claimed that they then drove on, but the fight escalated, causing him to pull over. Pedro told the courtroom that once pulled over, Christian approached him but said that he began punching Christian before driving off, leaving him on the ground. Pedro told the courtroom that Christian was alive when he drove off, but said that he never saw him again. Under cross-examination, Prosecutor Kramer asked Pedro why he hid Christian's bag in his closet even after he'd spoken to police. According to Pedro, he hid the bag because he was afraid that his parents would find it, even though his parents lived in Miami. He claimed that after the fight, he had planned on committing suicide with a sleeping pill concoction that was found in his car, and claimed that he had used the phone's flashlight to illuminate his planned suicide and had put his phone on airplane mode. He also claimed that the internet searches were simply for suicide purposes. Prosecutor Kramer had a sarcastic response to Pedro's claims. Quote, so that's your interesting alternative, hmm? You drive all the way around all of Gainesville, all the way to the far north of town, almost to Bradford County, to kill yourself? And you need some privacy while you do that, so you put your phone on airplane mode. And you're going to need your flashlight app because you can't use the lights on the front of the car. You're going to need that flashlight for 48 minutes, end quote, he questioned. Quote, that's correct, end quote, replied Pedro. In closing statements, assisting prosecutor Bill Elzel said that Pedro had purchased a murderer's starter pack of duct tape, a shovel, and enough sleeping pills to knock somebody out for days before strangling Christian. Defense attorneys argued back, stating that Pedro was suicidal, not homicidal. It didn't take the jury long to reach a verdict.
We, the jury, finds as follows as the defendant, Pedro Andreas Bravo. The defendant is guilty of first-degree murder.
They found Pedro Bravo guilty of first-degree murder. The sentencing phase followed, and Christian's family were given the opportunity to address the judge. They asked Judge James Colaw to impose the maximum sentence, life in prison without parole. Quote, I cannot express how our lives were destroyed on September the 20th by the acts of Mr. Bravo. I cannot tell you the pain we have gone through. My wife and son cry. My entire family. I ask you for the maximum amount of penalty. I also ask that he not contact my family again, end quote, said Carlos. Before the sentencing, Pedro too had a chance to address the judge. He refused to accept responsibility for what he had done. Quote, there are no words to explain this. No words to explain 2 years of heartbreak to his family, my family, and anyone involved in this. But I know in my heart, and I know God knows, that I did not kill Christian. I will face my sentence. I will do my time. End quote.
When they came with the verdict and they announced it, it was a relief that, you know, justice was served. We cried. We didn't enjoy or celebrate nothing. Nobody won. And I'm taking my son back home. And, you know, Pedro's family is also destroyed.
Pedro was subsequently sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In addition, he was ordered to serve 5 years for false imprisonment, 30 years for poisoning, 5 years for tampering with evidence, and 5 years for making a false police report. Outside of the court, Carlos said that he could not forgive Pedro because he showed no sign of remorse or repent.
I cannot be more blessed than being the father of Christian and Alexander. For me, both of them are the most precious gift given to me by God. My favorite thing about Christian is his smile, his heart. He will give you a hug, give you a kiss without you asking. And I miss that. I miss that.
The murder of Christian Aguilar gripped the South Florida community. In the wake of his disappearance, the community truly came together and gave so much of themselves to engage in a cause. They rallied around the Aguilar family and were bonded together by the tragic thought that Christian could have been their kid, their brother, or their loved one. They collectively clung onto the hope that Christian would be found, possibly harmed, but alive. Sadly, it wasn't meant to be. The case brought out both the very best in people, but also showed how deeply depraved some people can become. It was a deadly reminder that jealousy and obsession can often turn fatal. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to give a massive thank you to all of my Patreon and Himalaya Plus supporters. Feel free to check it out for some awesome bonus content. I'd also like to ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider giving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. It truly does help out, and I am forever grateful. Big thanks to anybody who has simply listened to an episode as well. The support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit me at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read my true crime articles. Stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Blood and Firewater. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hey guys, my name is Rashad Jones, and I am the host of Blood and Firewater Podcast, a podcast where we shoot tequila and chase it with a case of murder. Some cases may have been covered in other podcasts before, and that's okay. Allow us to just guide you back down that rabbit hole as we re-examine the people, the places, and the things about your favorite cases. You can reach out to us on Instagram at Blood and Firewater Podcast and Twitter at BFW Pod Squad. You got a case you want to suggest? Shoot an email to bloodandfirewater@gmail.com. Blood and Firewater Podcast does contain explicit language and graphic content not suitable for all ages, so listener's discretion is advised. Stay alert and stay alive.